you're listening to the My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And this is Kevin Sampath from Australia. Well, I can feel the tears rolling down my face already because the Australian cricket season is coming to a close. But I hear that your season's starting up, David. Are you excited?
Yeah, it's not for a few weeks yet. We don't start until mid-April, but yeah, we're getting excited now and, you know, netting with purpose. So, yeah, it's very good. So, how did your season go, Kevin?
Me, personally, it was a pretty average season. In the team's perspective as well, I think we didn't do as well as we hoped to. We ended up short at the end. We need to win our last game to make the semis, but we lost against the team that was undefeated. So we came fifth. And personally, yeah. And personally, in my batting and bowling, I felt I just came up short as well. Maybe I didn't train hard enough, I don't know. But I did put in good performances here and there. But generally, collectively, as a season, it didn't just come through together.
So would you put it down to inconsistent performance across the whole team?
Yeah, I'd say so. And I'd just say that maybe we weren't sure of our responsibilities in the team. When our main players failed, the other players just froze and never performed. So we had to, maybe next season, we have to address the responsibilities and try and work as a team better.
Yeah, that's a really important part of being in a team, is knowing exactly what your job is. And if you're not sure, I know myself, I've played in teams where I'm not quite sure what my job is supposed to be. And so, you know, how can you do it if you don't really know what it is you're supposed to be doing? So maybe that's something you can talk about when you get together for pre-season. Do you play any pre-season matches, you know, friendly games to start off to get yourself going? Or do you just...
No, we don't have any friendlies. We just get straight into the season. So it's really up to the training to get us tuned.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So maybe you can work that out next season. Maybe you have to make a bid for the captaincy, Kev.
Yeah, that's right. We're trying to get a new team together next year because our captain's a bit old, so he's thinking about retiring this year. So there's a few fake tears going around. But yeah, how's the weather in England?
At the moment, it's raining.
So are you allowed to go for a net session?
We're indoors still at the moment, so we're okay there. But the positive thing, and when you live in the UK, you have to cling on to these little rays of hope. It's spring rain. It's not winter rain. It's not that horrible, you know, freezing cold. Don't know when it's going to end. Just everybody soaking wet rain. It's actually, you know, quite nice rain. So that's about the only hope I can have at the moment. So we're sticking with it. But the other day it was definitely warm enough. I mean, you may not, if you were over here, you may not have thought so. But the other day it was definitely warm enough for us to play outside.
Yeah.
I've played in some pretty atrocious weather. Rain, cold, especially in April and May, it can be very, very cold. So, and the other day it's quite mild. So we were, you know, I updated my Facebook status. I said, you know, David is wondering if he can go outside and have a net. So yeah, this time of year, definitely hope springs eternal. So what I've been doing this week is I've been setting my goals for the season. So seeing as your season's over, I thought it might be worth me just going through the things that I want to do this season. The main thing for me as a coach, I suppose, is that I've got two private clients still, which we're hoping to have much, much better seasons this year. So between all the three of us, really. So so my aim there is to help the two people I'm working with meet their goals. So that's my biggest aim for this season. But also, I've volunteered myself to coach the under nines this year because my son is seven, so he's just about old enough to be playing under nines cricket. So
yeah,
I'm coaching the under nines,
Nice.
so that's quite fun. That's more, to be honest, it's not really cricket coaching. It's just sort of crowd control. You feel like a sergeant major sometimes, but that's
Yeah.
okay because you, when they enjoy it, you enjoy it, and they've definitely been enjoying it. And obviously, you're not going to get particularly good performances out of 6 and 7 and 8 year olds. But you know, especially as it's the first
Yes.
time most of them have picked up a cricket bat or tried to bowl. But you can already, I mean, I've only been doing it a few weeks, and
Yeah.
you can already see a little bit of progress there. So, you know, they're starting to become aware of the different things, so that's good. Personally, yeah, personally, I'm going to
It's
go
good
because
to
I'm a
hear.
wicket keeper. My biggest goal this year is to make 25 dismissals for the season, because I think that will probably be
Nice.
make me the number one in the league. I think that, because last year I think the biggest was 20, 24, 24 or 25. So, and I got 23. So I was a bit gutted. I didn't quite get the number one spot. So I'm going for 25 this year, and so all my practicing is going to be for the two areas where I feel I can improve on my wicket keeping, which is leg side takes. You can always improve on that. You're always working on that. You're never perfect at that. And also my diving catches, because I dropped a couple of catches, one-handed, full stretch diving catches last season. So I'm going to be trying to improve those as well.
Yeah.
Want to score some runs. I
Okay.
don't know exactly where I'm going to be in the batting order this season, so I haven't set my targets. But I'm setting a low target of 150 runs for this season, and depending on where I bat in the order, I might change that, because I normally bat towards the end of the innings, and you know, in the last few overs, and you have to give it a bit of a hit, and it's not always conducive to getting a lot of runs. But if I can get 150 runs, you know, and at an average of, I don't know, 15 or 20 down the order, then I'll be happy with that. And the rest of it is the normal kind of stuff that you'd expect from me, really. You know, keep training, keep going to the gym, keep sticking to my nutrition plan, and keep with the, you know, visualizing success and all the rest of it.
Nice. Well, good luck with that, David. Keep us posted throughout the season on how that goes.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, between you and I, you know, we're giving people sort of real life examples of how you can do it at club level. You know, you don't have to be a professional player to be able to take advantage of professional techniques like fitness training, like mental preparation, and getting your nutrition sorted out. It's just a matter of having the commitment.
Should we get into the questions, David?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. The first question is from a person who calls himself the Cricket Nut, and he or
That's a
she
good name.
asks, he or she asks, one of the boys I teach at our club has had a trigger movement for years, which works well for him, and he's done brilliantly against bowlers, but hasn't a clue how to play bowling machines because he can't figure out when to start the trigger, as there is always a bit of a delay as the ball gets gripped by the wheels. Has anyone got any clues that I can tell him? It's doing his head in because he bats badly when he stops triggering, and badly when he triggers against a machine. Now, David, I've only faced about 5 minutes of a bowling machine in my life, so you're going to have to answer this one. Have you faced a bowling machine?
I've faced and used a bowling machine, so yeah, it's an interesting experience in that, I don't know if you noticed this, Kev, when you did it, but it feels completely different. It doesn't quite feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's right.
And the reason for that is that they've looked into this, they've done studies into this, and the reason it doesn't quite feel comfortable is that you don't get the bowler running up, gathering, and then you see the arm coming around, and so you lose all those clues as to what's going to be happening. And the more experienced the batsman you are, the more you rely on the clues of the bowler to know where the ball's going to be coming out, and the more quickly you can pick up the line and the length. So yeah, it's a matter of timing and being able to see what's happening. So biomechanics people have looked into it, and they've seen that batsmen actually change the way they bat when they face a bowling machine. They have a lower back lift, and the triggers are slightly different. So this is exactly what's happening in Cricket Nut's case, or the person that Cricket Nut is coaching. There's not a great deal you can do about it. The first thing you have to say is that you must feed the ball correctly in. So if you have got somebody feeding the ball in rather than one of those automated feeders, then they need to hold the ball up in the air before they put it in. Because if they just shove it in, you've not really got much of a chance. So you need to hold the ball up in the air, high above your head, then put it into the machine, and then pop, it goes, ka-chunk, comes out. So you have to be doing that. If you're not doing that already, then do that. And then it really is just a matter of probably watching the bowling machine bowl a few times, just so you can see, just so you can get the timing of the ball going in to the ball popping out. Because, as you say, it can get stuck in the wheel sometimes and not come out instantly, which is a bit unnerving sometimes. So, especially if you're facing very, very quick bowling machine. So that's really all you can do there. The other thing I would say is, don't use the bowling machine as a replacement for a bowler. In other words, don't say, right, I'm gonna put the ball in random places. I'm going to bowl you some on the length and some back of a length and some forward, all the rest of it. Be very cautious about doing that, I would say. What you should really be doing is using it to refine a particular shot. So you're going to say, right, I'm going to work on my straight drive today, and all the bowling machine does is bowl straight half volleys at you, just ball after ball after ball, because the bowling machine allows you to hit lots of balls in very quick succession and hone that muscle memory. So drill like that. Do drills with the bowling machine. And speaking of bowling machine drills, if you want to know more about bowling machine drills, have a look at Gary Palmer's courses on Pitch Vision Academy, especially the front foot drives course, and also what's coming up soon is the back foot drives course, because there's absolutely tons of drills you can do there with throwdowns and with a bowling machine. And the other thing is, while I think of it, is don't bother with the bowling machine, or only half the time face the bowling machine. The other half the time, have a coach who stands maybe 15, 16, 17 yards away, takes a one-step run-up or a two-step run-up, and gives you throwdowns. Because that's a bit more... You get to see the coach run up and even though it's only two steps, you can see them run up, gather and throw the ball. And if the coach has got a decent arm, then they can get a decent pace. So that's the other thing. Although throwdowns aren't quite as accurate as a bowling machine, obviously. And then once you face the bowling machine, go and face some real bowlers.
So a bowling machine should really be only used to perfect the shot.
Yeah. There are occasions where you can use it for certain drills, which is slightly different, you know, games and things like that. You can use the bowling machine in a slightly different way. But 90% of the time, 95% of the time, it should really only be used for honing a particular shot, either doing a drill to hone a shot, or just getting ball after ball after ball on the length, line and length that you need to play that shot.
Okay.
That's all you can do, really. It is a catch-22. You can't really get out of it.
Yeah, even when I faced the bowling machine for the first time, David, I thought it brought my self-esteem down a lot more than it should have brought it up. So I stopped using it after that 5 minutes.
How did you do it? Was somebody just giving you sort of random balls to hit, or were you doing it for a specific shot?
It wasn't for the shot. So I learned something new today, because they were changing the angles and the lengths after every ball. So after 5 minutes, I got sick of it because I was missing nearly everything.
There is a drill on Gary Palmer's front foot drives course which does have some slight variations on the length of the bowling machine, it's all front foot drives. Even that is all front foot drives. It just brings in a slight amount of shot selection into it. But apart from that, everything on Gary's course and everything that every coach I've ever spoken to, it says, only use the bowling machine for technical work. Don't use it for just general batting. You might as well face a real bowler.
All right, let's move on to our next question from Cody. And he asks, hi, I'm 13, I'm a fast opening bowler. I would like to know Any tips for a good fitness plan for my preseason? Thanks. David, going through Pitch Vision Academy, I know there's a fitness course. Can you tell us a bit about that before you answer this question?
That if you want a comprehensive answer, Cody, and anyone else who's listening, then go on to pitchvision.com/academy and have a look at the fitness training course written by Rob Armin, who is the strength and conditioning coach of Glamorgan Cricket Club. So he knows what he's talking about. That gives real details on pre-season training, off-season training, in-season training, what you need to do, what you need to avoid, everything. So it covers everything you possibly need, and also it includes some workouts that you can do. You can just copy if you don't want to design your own program, but it does give you the ability to design your own program if you want to do that as well. So it's a real sort of toolkit for anyone who wants to design fitness programs or just use off-the-shelf fitness programs. It's got everything you need there. And if you've got any questions, then there's a forum that you can ask Rob some questions. If you want to know, something specific that isn't answered on the course, then you can ask him. So if you want a comprehensive answer, that's where to go. But what we'll do is we'll see if we can do a cut-down version to try and give some examples for Cody. So what I'd say is he's 13, did you say, 13 years old? Yeah.
Yeah, 13.
Okay, so it depends what he's done, what sort of training he's done in the past. Now, the average 13-year-old is probably not going to have done very much fitness-based work anyway. They might have done fielding drills which get them out of breath. They might play football in the winter, but they wouldn't necessarily be doing any resistance training or interval training or anything like that. So we'll assume Cody's in that category. And they're just he's just starting out. So if he's just starting out, then what I'd say is start with something really simple. Body weight training is excellent training if you're just starting out, and it improves your strength, it improves your ability, your stamina, your work capacity, and it gets you in the habit of the types of movements which are good for your performance and your injury prevention, which is the other big side of fitness training. It's not all about performance, it's also about injury prevention. So if he goes on to say pitchvision.com and has a look on the My Cricket Coach section, then we do a 4-week body weight training course for free for you to be able to download and use.
Yeah.
And the good thing about that is it's balanced. So it doesn't just... What a lot of people do is they do some press-ups, they do some sit-ups, and leave it, maybe a couple of other things, and leave it at that. So it's not balanced. But this 4-week course, body weight training course, covers the whole of the body. So you're not focusing too much on one particular area. You're covering the whole of the body. So I'd recommend, if he's never done anything before, have a look at that and see if that does the job. If he's been training for a while and he's got a sort of decent base of strength and endurance and all the rest of it, then this time of year in the UK, in March, then you're probably looking at building up to a peak for the start of the season. So probably the focus is going to be on power-based work. Things like throwing a medicine ball against the wall, catching it, throw against the wall in quick succession. Clap press-ups, which we've talked about many, many times before. Jump squats, which is where you perform a normal squat, but you do a jump at the end of it, and that generates power through the hips. Interval training, that sort of sprint-type training where you don't necessarily look to go for... You're completely out of breath and dripping with sweat at the end of it. You go more for quality, so you have more of a shorter sprint with a longer rest, and you see how fast you can go in that time, and you recover completely before you do the next one. So that's interval type training if you've got the time for that. But this time of year, it's all about speed and power, really.
Are you ever too young to do any kind of body weight exercises, David? Because I've heard a lot of myths where they say you shouldn't start doing any kind of body weight exercises or anything if you're really young.
Yeah, that is a complete myth. I mean, anyone who says you shouldn't do any kind of exercise when you're young is, that's just silly because, running is a body weight exercise.
Yeah.
So, you can't, you, no one would say to children, don't run, don't climb trees, don't get on your bike
Yeah.
and ride around with your mates. That's just silly. So there isn't really a minimum age for that kind of thing. Probably you want to avoid formal type fitness training, i.e. stuff which is outside of a play type environment. You probably want to avoid that until you're a teenager, I'd say. I mean, you can do it as young as 10 or 11 if you so desire. But most kids get bored by, if you get an 11-year-old in the gym, it's not. You're not going to have them doing, right, we're going to do 3 sets of 10 reps of squats and then 3 sets of 10 reps of bench press, and it's just they get bored. They get bored, and it's as soon as kids get bored, they mess around, and as soon as they start messing around, it's unsafe. So, although physiologically they can do
Yeah.
it, I think psychologically you probably want to avoid it until probably. Well, that it's up to you when you feel ready, really. Some kids could do it at 12. Some kids could prob would probably need to wait until they're a bit older, 15, 16, 17.
Yeah.
So, but in that time, you don't have to do nothing. You just do more sort of play-based stuff. So, you can throw in. We've talked about climbing trees, throwing rocks to try and make them skim off pools, water and all that kind of thing. Just playing, basically, just having a good time and having a good time doing stuff physically rather than playing on the Xbox or watching telly. That's the main thing. And play lots of cricket.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds good. Let's move on to our next question from Amandeep. And he asks, I want to know exactly how to take more wickets while bowling off spin in a limited overs match. Bowling in a limited overs match, bowling spin, he'd tend to come into the middle overs, if not middle to late, David. So what do you reckon? Do you reckon changing paces is the only thing, or are there other areas that he could look at?
The way you do things in 2020 cricket than the way you do things in longer format limited overs.
Yeah.
But generally, yeah, you'll be bowling in the middle of the innings when the batsmen are trying to tick the score along and build a decent base to allow the last few overs them to go for it. So they don't want to take too many risks because they want to keep wickets in hand for the last few overs. But they still want to score at a reasonable rate. So they're going to be looking to knock the ball around and they're going to be looking to hit the bad balls for boundaries, fours and sixes. So the first thing, which may be an obvious thing to say, but the first thing is bowl as few bad balls as you can. Because if you bowl a half volley outside off stump, then they're going to throw the arms at it. It's just. They'll always do that in, especially in one day cricket. Whatever stage it is, if you bowl a bad ball, they're gonna try it. They're gonna punish it. That happen in any sort of cricket, but especially in one day cricket, each run is more valuable. Also, you don't want to bowl too many balls exactly the same every time because a batsman can get into a rhythm against you and start scoring runs. If they know exactly where the ball's going to be landing every ball, then they can knock it into a gap, and you suddenly you're going for six and over, and then before you know it, you've bowled a couple of bad balls and you've gone for a four and a six, and your spell is starting to look quite expensive. So you do need to have some kind of variations. They don't need to be massive variations, but for an off spinner, you probably want to have a look at developing an arm ball of some kind or another. You want to be able to, if you can, put the ball in the same place at a variety of different paces. So you want to have a loopier one and a flatter one is always handy. And if you can bowl a Yorker, that's always handy as well. I mean, Yorkers aren't just for seamers. If you can fire a ball in at leg stump and it's on a Yorker length, then it's very hard to score off that, even against a slower bowler. The other thing I'd say is the batsman is looking for clues from you. We talked about clues against the bowling machine and how you can't get them. Well, the batsman is looking for clues from you to see what sort of ball you're going to bowl. So if you can fool them somewhat by pretending to bowl one kind of ball when actually you know you're going to bowl another kind of ball. So if you approach the, if you attack the crease more quickly, yeah, and scrunch up your face as if you're going to bowl a quicker ball, and then you can, in fact you can even bring your arm round quickly, and then if you get the timing right, just slow it down at the last moment, and it comes out much slower than it would look. And then as soon as you let go of the ball, really follow through as if you, you know, you'd bowled a quicker one, then that could be enough to fool the batsman and upset his timing. And the same the other way round. You want to keep your eye on the batsman. So something that Jeremy Snape advocates, yeah, is he never turns his back on the batsman when he's walking back to his mark. He keeps his eye on them because he's looking for clues from them. If they're starting to get twitchy, if you bowl a couple of dot balls, then they're probably starting to get a little bit twitchy. You might see them sort of grip the bat a bit tighter and look at, look across to deep wicket and see if that, they size up the boundary. And you can think to yourself then, aha, he's going to go for this next one. So then you can, if you know he's going to go for it, then you can vary what you were going to originally do.
So it's really about accuracy and keeping the batsman guessing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the two opposites, really. Be accurate, but also be accurate in a variety of different ways. that's the trick. But it's quite, that's quite hard to do. You know, bowling variations, ask Monty Panesar, bowling variations is quite a hard thing to be able to learn how to do. So it's something you probably have to practice quite a lot before you introduce into a game.
Yeah, it's also important not to try variations in the game, isn't that right, David? Like, because I've seen bowlers who have not perfected their googly or their flipper or whatever, and they go and try it in the game and just get hammered. So they should really try and perfect it in the net before they try it in a game.
Absolutely, you couldn't agree more. And speaking of that, you really need to know your game inside out in, for field settings as well. If you know where the ball's going to go against your bowling, then you can set the field much more accurately. So don't just go for an orthodox field just because it's the way that you've seen it on the telly. Know your own areas, know where the ball goes when you're bowling, especially when it's going in the air, and then you, that's where you can put your fielders. Orthodox fields are good because they work. We know that they work, otherwise they wouldn't have become orthodox fields. But you should know yourself exactly why you have the field that you have. So, and that, the only way you're going to know that is knowing your own game inside out.
Well, our last question is from a guy or a girl called Ashes to Aussies, which is a pretty good name. And
Ashes to Aussies?
Yeah.
I don't like him already. I'm going to give him bad advice.
Well, they ask, I keep getting caught out at point. Everyone tells me to get my elbow up. Is it true? And is there any other key to it? If there isn't, how can I keep my elbow up? Thanks. Any thoughts, David? Because batting isn't really my strength.
Well, the first thing I'd say is that I should get selected for the Australian team as quickly as possible. Because we've got Paul Collingwood ready for you. Keeping the elbow up is one of those classic coaching points, isn't it? You know, it's something that everybody's heard a coach say to him at some point, I would have thought. Your old school coach who stands at the back of the net and goes, oh, keep your elbow up. Well, that doesn't really help, because then you start thinking about your elbow and you stop thinking about the shot. So they're right to say you should keep your elbow up, because the role of your forearm for your top hand is, your forearm is the start of your bat. Your bat starts at your elbow. If you imagine that, the bat starts at your elbow and goes all the way down. Then you actually grip onto the handle, and then you've got the blade of the bat. That's all one long straight line, right?
Yeah.
If your elbow is down when you play a drive, this is going to be a drive because you don't need to keep your elbow up when you're cutting. So it's either going to be a back foot or a front foot drive. So if your elbow is down when you're driving, then the bat is going to be, it's not going to be straight. It's going to be horizontal in some way or another because your elbow's down, unless your wrist is really badly twisted over. You're not keeping your wrist straight. So
your
elbow's out to the side. That sounds uncomfortable to me. Some people do bat like that, but you find they're very bottom-handed. They tend to scoop the ball through the leg side quite a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If his wrist is firm, then he or she, I should say, or she could be a girl. then they are not batting with a straight bat. So you know, your classic coach, you know, or bat with a straight bat. So the way to stop doing that is you're probably chasing at balls which are either too far away or you're not getting to the pitch of the ball enough. So if it's a back foot drive, you're not getting back and across enough. So you're just reaching out because your weight is still where you stand in your stance. So you can't. You have to drop your elbow to be able to reach out. Or if you are getting back across, or if it's a front foot drive getting to the line of the ball, then you're reaching too wide outside the off stump to play the drive, which is okay if you've got very good top hand control. But if you're hit, it's not ideal. But especially in one day cricket and things like that, you can get away with it. But if you haven't got good top hand control, and the bottom hand comes in to try and compensate, then as soon as the bottom hand comes in, you're scooping the ball up into the air. If the bottom hand's coming in too early, you're scooping the ball up into the air, which it sounds like is what's happening to this person.
What would you say if his bat was too heavy for him, David? Because I've seen people and personally experienced myself that when my bat's too heavy for me, my technique tends to go all over the place and I tend to play drives. I tend to sort of scoop drives to various positions.
Yeah, that can happen. If you've got a heavy bat, then you're having to use both hands to control the shot. And of course, the top hand should dominate in all the straight bat shots. So yeah, if you're having to use both hands, then it's very easy to scoop the ball up. So that's definitely worth thinking about. Is the bat a bit too heavy? And the easiest way to know whether the bat's a bit too heavy for you that I've found is grab your bat in your top hand, hold it out straight in front of you. So your arm is straight, as if you're pointing the bat to something very far away. And then move your arm out all the way out to the side as if you're signalling a no ball with the bat. Yep. But you've still got the bat in your hand. And then move it all the way back again. Yep. If you can do that without problem, then the bat's the right weight. If you can't do that, then the bat's too heavy for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good piece of advice, Kev. Well said on that. If it's not the weight of the bat, then what I would say is you probably want to think about doing some top hand drills, getting someone to throw some tennis balls at you and do some top hand drills so you're not using your bottom hand at all, and that should teach you then some control with the top hand. And then when you've done a few drills with just the top hand, then bring the bottom hand back in and do a few drills with the top hand and the bottom hand together, and then go back to playing. The whole idea of that is to get the feel, what it feels like to keep your elbow up when you're driving. And when you start to drop your elbow in a game and you go for the big drive and you think, oh, my elbow's dropping here, then you can pull out of it because you can feel it.
Yeah.
It's subconsciously, you can feel it. You don't want to think about it, but subconsciously you can feel it.
Let's recap of what we've gone through so far for today.
Okay.
Our first question was about trigger movement against the bowling machine, and thought it would be wise to not let the bowling machine replace the bowler, and that we should know that the bowling machine should only be used to perfect the shot.
Yep.
But also that when a person is putting the ball into the bowling machine, it should hold it up into the air so the batsman knows when it's coming in.
Yep.
Or the batsman could have a look at how the ball is going to come in for a while before going into the net. And then the question about the fitness plan for the pre-season for a fast bowler. We definitely recommend the fitness course in Pitch Vision Academy. And if not, check out the body weight exercises 4-week course in the My Cricket Coach section.
I'll put a link to that up in the show notes, by the way.
And if you're close to this season, then definitely recommend trying power-based exercises and also interval training. the question about bowling off spin in limited overs games, we came up with two simple solutions, which is trying to bowl accurately and with different variations to keep the batsman guessing and to try and tie him down so that they'll get themselves out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the last question about Ashes to Aussies who kept getting out at point and who was trying to get his elbow up but couldn't. We decided that he should try to keep his elbow up as the bat becomes an extension of
That's
his
right.
forearm
yep.
when he does, and that he should keep his elbow up and try not to play as wide away from his body when he has no control
yeah.
of it. And he's to either try to get to the ball or
yeah.
to leave it. And also to check the weight of his bat to see if that's all right.
Absolutely. And drill. Don't just try that in the nets, those stuff. Actually do it with with drills with a tennis ball until you get the feel right. You know, don't, because otherwise you're falling into the trap of saying keep your elbow
yeah.
up, and you don't know what that feels like, so you're just thinking, well, what does that feel like? But if you do some drills with a tennis ball or even in the mirror, just hold your bat in front of a full length mirror and do some drills and
yeah.
Play some shots and see what it looks like to keep your elbow up, and then
yeah.
remember that feel when you go into the net. That's very,
yeah,
very
that's
cool.
right. Huh? Alright, well, if you guys have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening. From Australia, this is Kevin Sampath signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.